Yeah, you got a little room.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the PWAB meeting. It is October 21st at 5:30, and this is a new day and a new time for our meeting. So to all of you out there in TV land, I hope you catch us and don't tune in tomorrow night, because we've moved our meetings to Wednesday at 5:30. So we do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order, and we will first have a moment of silence. Thank you. Are there any announcements? Does anybody have anything to let us know about? No?
Nope.
No? Well, then I'll take this opportunity. I just wanted to let people know that on November 7th at 8 a.m., registration opens for the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival. And this may seem like it's early to warn you about this, but and the festival isn't until January. But some events fill in the first 2 minutes. So, and the festival itself is largely well booked up in the first week. So if you're at all interested in coming to the festival, November 7th at 8 a.m., registration starts. The Bird Festival website is www.morrobaybirdfestival.org. And I just wanted to also say that this year we have a whole new initiative. We're trying to get new young birders. And so we are giving free registration to everyone between the ages of 13 and 18. And under 13 is already free. And we're giving away a limited number of $50 gift certificates to Wild Birds Unlimited. So if you are at all interested in having your young person get involved, this would be the opportunity. So thank you. Yes, go ahead.
In the spirit of that, I have something to tell everybody.
Okay.
We are in the midst of the second annual Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival going on right now all over town. So you have to keep your eyes open. It's not one of those festivals where, you know, it's one day and you go there. It's all over town, so look everywhere and you will find incredible hand-painted surfboards by local artists throughout town. And also during different weekends of the month, we have little events going on to keep this top of mind. This coming Sunday, the 25th, we'll have a musical concert in the yard over at Pizza Port with local band Panga. And you can come on by. We'll have some raffle prizes and music, and some of the artists will be on hand that you can meet. And you can also pick up a map there so you can find your way all over town and discover all the surfboards throughout the month of October. So thanks very much.
All right.
Excuse me, David. Where's your board displayed at?
Thank you for the plug. I actually have two boards this year. One of them is at Morro Bay Realty at the corner of Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard. And my second board is at Joe's Surfboard Shop on Quintana.
Thank you.
See, we learn something new every time we do this. Great. Any presentations, Rob?
No presentations, but I wanted to make an announcement regarding a workshop that's coming up next Thursday.
Good.
6:30 to about 8:30. We'll go longer if there's information that still needed to get out or people are still talking. It's here at the Vets Hall at 6:30, 9:30 next Thursday, October 29th. And the subject will be a project update on the water reclamation facility, taking public input on issues and ideas. I think there will be some interactive audience participation type activities, so you get a chance to use these fancy remote controls to pick the look that you like the best, some architecture and site planning issues. So it'll be fun for all. And hopefully we'll see a good crowd here at the Vets Hall next Thursday.
Thank you. Okay, public comment. Do we have any member of the public who would like to come up and speak to us about any issue at all?
Other than
what we're looking at today, yeah. Seeing no one willing to come forward, I will close public comment. Minutes from the September 24th meeting, and I unfortunately was not here, but I did listen to it. So are there any comments or questions about the minutes?
I have none.
I want to thank Stu Skiff, who is not here tonight, for stepping up to the plate and sharing that meeting. That was very nice of him to do. Okay, well, then I need a recommendation to approve the minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes as written.
All right, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Okay, the director's report. What a wonderful report we received this time. So let me first ask, Rob, if there's anything you want to highlight from the report or any specific things that you want to mention at this point in time for the viewers out there.
Well, first I want to highlight, hopefully it's more readable than the table format in past years, doing it a little bit more. We don't have to squeeze the font size down to 8 point to get everything to fit in the boxes now. I don't have anything specifically other than some questions that have come up in this week from board members, and I'd be happy to go through some of those, and maybe that'll help us through the plan or the report. You know, key things that we're working on are, of course, our water reclamation facility. And I think everybody knows about the public comment that was made a week and a half ago or so by the property owner at Rancho Galena, talking about how initial, I won't even say it a site plan, it was a site schematic showing all of the things that were on the council's wish list, how they could fit on the property, and we transmitted that to the owner so they would get a first look at it before we went public with it. The entire family wasn't satisfied with that, so we continue to work cooperatively with the property owner, and we're trying to find a compromise that is beneficial for both parties. Both of us want to get something out of this negotiation, but we're also not closing off any other options out in the Moro Valley. So no work or very little work has been done so far that is specific in the facilities master plan that is specific to the site. We've done a lot of flow calculations, a lot of concept, how things would fit, our liquid treatments analysis. It doesn't really matter. The SBR or the MBR doesn't care where it's located. We're about to embark on to some things that are very site-specific, such as the detailed site plan, and we'll need to have some closure on the property MOU before we embark on that, and then the specific environmental review before we kick off that wholeheartedly, we'll need to have some closure on that. And from what I understand, we're expecting a letter from the family stating their touch points very soon. So
can I ask a question real quick on that matter? The feeling I got, and I was wondering if you got the same feeling at the meeting at WRFCAC the other day, was it was mainly about the size or the amount of land that would be taken in order. It wasn't so much the fact of reclamation plants going there or anything of that nature. It was more just the quantity of land that may be required.
The size of the property, and we... this is a negotiation. We asked for everything that we wanted.
That's fine. And it's more for the public that I'm making the statement. It's not the fact he's saying, no, I don't want a reclamation site on his property or any of the families. I thought it felt like it was mainly just the quantity.
And the precise location of where the majority of buildings would occupy the site. So,
okay, thank you.
That's more of the issue than... I think we're at a point now where there's some agreement that it could go there as long as we can agree upon the size that is needed and where exactly on that site the facility will be. They don't want to have, you know, I think I've said this before, we don't have to build plants as ugly as we did in the 70s and 80s. And as you'll see in the public workshop, some interesting architecture that Fraser Seipel has as for examples of what wastewater treatments that can be done, blending them in with existing landforms. So we'll see that on the 29th. And so they're concerned about not just the public view, but their own view, because they'll be the primary viewer of that wastewater treatment plant.
Well, that's why I brought the question up, and I didn't feel from his end that he was making claims. He doesn't want to see a wastewater treatment plant there. It was purely, he was worried about how much taking was.
Exactly.
As a result. Thank you.
And I think he'd love to see a wastewater treatment plant. He loves wastewater treatment plants.
I'd agree with you.
Any other questions on this issue for Rob? I just wanted to thank you for bringing us up to date, because there have been rumors flying, and it's always good. I like to be able to honestly answer when people say, you know, that site's off the table. No, it's not.
No, it's not off the table, but we've never limited ourselves to that one site specifically.
Right.
It's the council's preferred site, but there are other sites that can work for a water reclamation facility also. So we don't want to be so tied down at this point to that one site. We can't from an environmental review standpoint, nor from a property negotiation standpoint. There was a question that came up about the Citizens Finance Committee will be looking towards perhaps leveraging our existing sales tax revenue and borrowing a larger chunk of money to do more street work in the short term, and then paying that back over long term, because costs escalate over time, and especially those costs that seem to be related to oil, which asphalt is. So they're looking at that, how much should be dedicated to it, how long a term that should be. On the other thing side of things, we're also looking at updating our pavement management plan. So we have received a proposal from a consultant to help us do that. We're not quite ready to issue that proposal, still working on those negotiations. And there's some thought about, we can actually do that. It's not that, it's rocket science. It's not rocket science, it's pavement science. So we have the expertise to do that in-house. We just don't have the manpower right now. And when we worked on it before, with the help of a couple of Cal Poly interns to do the field work and the data entry, it allowed the engineers to focus on the analysis portion and do that in-house. So we're actively recruiting some technical help to help us out with that. So in the coming months, we'll be bringing forward that that work to you.
Do you have
any idea when? I mean, what do you have a timeline for this project?
I mean, ideally, it would have already happened, but with our existing workload and other things that come up, it seems to be pushed off. I would say sometime in the spring. That's about as close as I can get at this point in time.
I had a quick question. With the price of oil down, have you experienced lower asphalt costs with the work going on, or has it really not changed?
Yeah, I don't think it's really changed a heck of a lot, because of I think the asphalt companies are negotiating long-term prices, and you don't see it right away. In fact, I've rarely seen it come down over the past years. It always seems to go
up. When oil can drop by, you know, down a third or two-thirds now.
But asphalt prices never seem to do that.
Yeah, that's probably very true. Thank you.
Mr. Skiff brought up some questions regarding some work that's happening behind Del Mar Park. And that area is outside of the city limits and within the county. And, you know, one of the questions is they're doing a bit of grading back there. I think it's some concern about if that soil remains exposed and we experience heavy storms. And I think he talked to one of the foremen, and they said it's not our responsibility what happens downstream. Well, it really is theirs. We'll be working with county staff to ensure that they have appropriate erosion control measures employed before it rains there. Make sure that all of our infrastructure is protected. He asked a question about what happens. I think what he was getting at is if Alpha Paul creaks through nobody's fault, is there anyone responsible? And typically, if an upstream landowner hasn't, you know, blocked anything, or it's considered, you know, act of nature, act of God, and you would work with your flood insurance or homeowner's insurance to satisfy that.
Could I ask a question there? It caught my eye, and I'm not sure if it's what Stu heard or what the fellow said. But if mud flows wind up plugging the culvert, that's not Caltrans' fault. That's Chevron's fault.
Exactly.
I mean, it's for flow rate. So I would assume that the homeowners upstream, if they get flooded as a result of mud blockage, I wouldn't see it going back to the homeowners. That'd be seen go to Chevron or whoever actually created the issue, the contractor or whatever. Okay. Am I wrong in that?
I took the second part of his question. He didn't mention that if it was – he said if nobody was responsible, if it was just an act of nature, act of God.
Then it goes back, you better have
And those insurance. Houses that back up to Alva Paul Creek along Island Street, those are all within the floodplain, and I would assume that – if they have a lender involved, that they would all have flood insurance along.
Generally,
there.
You do. Yes, exactly.
If Chevron, and I'm not exactly sure what the dam he's referring to in these questions, if they remove this dam, I haven't seen a dam back there. But if there's problems caused by that, who would pay the damages? We would look to have Chevron pay for any damages that they caused. He also wanted to know whether, because they're going to be drilling, from what I understand, it's two home sites back behind Delmar Park is what they're going to develop and sell. It's about 80 acres back on that particular parcel, and I think they can put two home sites back there. I may have the acreage wrong, but I know it's two home sites. And they're going to be drilling individual wells back there. That's outside the city limits. Stu wanted to know if we could provide the water, and they would pay us for it. Well, our LCP and general plan prohibit, without modification, of course, services outside the existing service boundary. So it would take a little bit of work, and I'm not sure it's worth the effort for two homes. He also wonders, I think, if... well drilling will become illegal. I don't think well drilling like this will ever become for individual homes, because I think what he's thinking of is SGMA, the State Groundwater Management Act, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. I don't think they'll become illegal. I think things will become more regulated as those groundwater basins fall under that requirements. So I think that answered those questions. See, anything else on the director's report? We had a great tree planting on Saturday. Planted 17 trees.
And cactus are gone.
And the cactus, there might still be a few suspended around town. Some clever cactus planters have found some interesting places to put cactus, yes. We're going to start some downtown tree trimming. Arbor First of Morro Bay was a successful low bidder, and we're looking at trimming about 148 trees in the downtown area.
Can I ask you to highlight the results of the citizens' efforts to conserve water? Because I think the public would like to know how well they're doing.
Sure. We've done very well. Our goal, the state goal set for us, is 12%. In July, this is water produced, water production amounts. And so there's probably a little bit of losses in there. So the conservation rates on an individual property might be higher, but this is our water production. In July of 2013, we produced 42 million gallons for that month. Of this year, 33 million gallons and change, for a 21% reduction. Similarly, in August, a 20% reduction, and in September, We did, made a little bit of a drop, but still well beyond our target, and we hit 17%. So very good water conservation by our community.
And also because it's our largest tourist season,
yes.
Even the tourists are helping.
Are helping us conserve
yes.
water, too. And I heard comments from, I was at a NEP function at noontime, and some out-of-state EPA representatives were at there, and they commented how they liked to see the flyers in the hotel about asking them to conserve water, and in the restaurants that they only serve water upon request. So they appreciated that at that effort here. And part of our water conservation program, we instituted some conservation rebates. We have a cash for grass, remove your lawn, and you can get a rebate. A rain barrel program and an irrigation retrofit, smart irrigation controller are added to our existing older incentives for toilet retrofit and Energy Star washing machines. So like Damaris says here, we're well on track to meeting our 12% reduction.
I'd just like to say that I added two rain barrels to my property, and I went online to our Morro Bay site. I got the form. It was very easy, specific. I took it down, dropped it off. I heard from somebody within like a week and a half. They said they were going to drive by, make sure that I was taking it off my roof and through my gutters, and it was set on level ground and all that I'd met all the requirements. And in about a week and a half after that, I got a check. So I encourage everybody to do this because it's so easy.
Just one question. Is there any end date on these rebates, or are they sort of going to go on as long as...
They're going to go on as long as needed or as we have funding available. We budgeted about $25,000 for retrofits, so we'll continue to do that as long as the funding lasts.
So apply early out there,
yes.
Folks.
And they're fairly modest individual items, so we have some room still left in the program. Encourage anybody that wants to apply to apply.
I have a quick question on two different ones. And the fact this director's report's great, and I see things now. And on the nutmeg tank replacement, it says you're presently in county permitting for or processing county permits to put a tank in place. So it's been designed. Well, how large a tank are you going back in on the nutmeg?
It's a 1 million gallon tank.
Oh, okay.
And we've changed from steel to, I think we're settled on concrete, right, Rick?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's a concrete tank.
Yeah.
Is it? It's removing the old one, putting the new one there, or
correct.
Is it in addition?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
That old one needs to go away.
I was a little surprised it required county permitting. I thought it'd be
it's outside the city limits.
Oh, okay. It's out of your urban boundary.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the second thing was the Churl stream gauge. As I remember, that's so you could pump the wells that when the Churl Creek runs at a certain level. And how many stream gauges are you having to put
in? Two stream
oh.
gauges.
Okay.
One will be at a It will replace the existing county gauge at Kinney Road,
oh.
and one will additional gauge be at about Choro Creek Road. I think that's the name of the road there.
Okie doke. So you see them in place maybe sometime next year or something like that?
Probably. We're going to try to meet that construction window. So we're working with the property owner, which is the RCD.
Well supposedly El Nino's coming. We might have an opportunity to pump some water out of there.
And they're required under our water rights permit to install
right.
those stream gauges.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I'm pleased in the format, the way the formatting turned out, and much more readable than it
yes,
has been
yes.
in past years.
We enjoyed it very much.
Okay.
Thank you again, and we will just accept it. We don't have to take any action on it. We have no old business, so we will move on to our item of new business, which is consideration of City Council Resolution 68-15, delegating authority to the Public Works Director, Mr. Leivick. to execute documents for Caltrans and grant-funded project, and I'll let you explain it.
And Rick is going to take this one
okay.
and move it forward for us.
All right.
Good evening, Madam Chair. Rick Sauerwein, your Capital Projects Manager. Staff's seeking the board's recommendation tonight for the City Council to adopt Resolution 6815 at their meeting on October the 27th. I'd like to give you a presentation tonight that will give you an overview of the project so you know what it is that we're talking about, and the people out in town can re-familiarize themselves with this project. We last worked on this project, I think, back in 2001 time frame. So it's been in the queue for quite some time and has been in abeyance. But we're moving the project forward now, and we're anxious to get it rolling. So, you know, why are we bothering to make the improvements? I think everybody in town is familiar with how close the northbound on and off ramps are to Main Street at Highway 41. Only about 75 feet separate those two intersections, and it creates significant amount of problems particularly during heavy tourist travel on the weekends, or if there's a major event happening out on the grade, you often see traffic back up on that northbound ramp out onto Highway 1, which creates a dangerous situation that we want to make sure doesn't happen on a regular basis. Also, those two intersections experience the highest number of collisions of any intersection in town. And it also is a key gateway to our community, and so we're anxious to improve the area. You'll see in these eye charts that I've got here, I won't go through them in great detail, but what you see on the right is an explanation of what level of service, or LOS, means. And it's simply a measure of how smoothly traffic flows in a given location. Level of service C is the desirable location. Level of service D, E, and F are degraded conditions. And to the point where at level of service F, you see very long delays and very long backups. Right now, as I mentioned, we do see sporadic delays out there, but we would expect that if we don't do something to improve the situation by 2020, which is a mere 5 years away, the northbound ramp at Highway 41 will degrade to a level of service E, which is just short of intolerable. I'll characterize it that way.
I'm sorry, which leg was that? The northbound?
Northbound off-ramp.
Okay, 241, coming off the 1.
That's
gotcha.
Correct.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You'll also see that in 2030, not only the northbound ramp will experience problems, it'll actually fail by that time if we don't do something. But also Main Street and Highway 41 will routinely operate in a degraded situation. So people will experience delays on a regular basis, and they'll burn a lot more greenhouse gas, which is something that we all don't want to do. And then finally, if we look 25 years out, to the ultimate design year, both Main Street and the ramp would fail without improvement. That's a condition that's not intolerable, or that's not tolerable when you look at how important that connector and that intersection is to our regional transportation system. You know, we get all of a vast majority of our visitors from the Central Valley, and they're coming from Bakersfield, Fresno, and all points along the valley. And so they're always using Highway 41 and Highway 46 to come to Morro Bay because it's the principal route. And so it's very important to us that we improve that gateway to our community. We've got several developers that are currently pursuing new initiatives in that area, which will also compound the traffic situation. But it will also improve that area as a gateway. It's also an area that likely will see a lot of improvement because we're going to have to reroute our sewer lines and some of our reclaimed water lines through that intersection to go out to the preferred site at Rancho Colina. So a little bit in review of the project history that we've been through to date. We started what Caltrans calls a project study report back in June of 2001. Because these are both state highways, we have to follow a very rigorous process that Caltrans lays out for all routes on the state highway system. And the PSR is always the first step. We were able to complete a draft project report in September of 2002. And in September of that same year, we completed a mitigated negative declaration as part of the CEQA process for the project and determined that a negative declaration was appropriate for the work. We did not pursue the actual final authorization of those documents because at that point in time, the principal motivator for this work, which was the Duke Energy Plant upgrade, took an about-face and went into suspension, and so we suspended this process in 2003. Since that time, Caltrans's process has changed somewhat, but we were very fortunate to be able to sit down with the Caltrans staff and show them the work that had already been accomplished and get their approval to move forward with what is now called the intersection control evaluation process. Instead of going back and having to recreate the wheel in terms of the initial project documentation. So we completed ICE Step 1 back in January of this year, and we moved on to ICE Step 2. You'll see here from this flow chart that ICE Step number 1 really is a screening process where we take all of our traffic data, and we do some preliminary engineering after we've updated that data, and do an early analysis of what some of the potential design solutions might be. And the goal of that process is to eliminate all but a couple of key alternatives. And we were able to do that, and Caltrans approved that and authorized us to move on to Step 2, which is a more vigorous traffic and economic analysis of those alternatives. And we're very near completion on that now. We submitted our original draft about a month and a half ago, and we got comments back from Caltrans, and we're working to make those changes at this point in time and hope to submit that revision very soon so that we can then continue on. We also have received approval from Caltrans based on the work in Step 1 and what they've seen in Step 2 so far to proceed with our preliminary engineering phase of this project. And so if Caltrans, or if the council approves our this authority in the resolution that we're seeking, our first step will be to put together a request for proposal to get the engineering and environmental support that will vigorously move us through that environmental documentation and early design. I thought we missed one there. So
can I ask a question?
Sure,
real
Steve.
Quick? Are we going to be evaluating the merits of the actual project, be it roundabout or signalization, or are we purely tonight?
This is purely informational
okay,
tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and it's a little early in the process for that. That'll happen when we're
it'll come back to
complete
us at some
with
point
the CEQA.
In the future.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the step two that we've drafted so far has narrowed the viable build alternatives down to two. One is signal control, which is the conventional approach, and then the more robust approach is the roundabout, which we've got some experience with here in town, and I think most people will agree that it was a vast improvement of the intersection up at Morro Bay Boulevard. And we see a real opportunity for some success here, because when we do the traffic analysis, what we see is that by the design year, if we pursue the signal alternative, it will already be starting to degrade, and it will be experiencing backups and more greenhouse gas emissions collected. As I mentioned earlier, if we stay with what we have, the four-way stop, we're going to be at level of service F, a failed intersection with lots and lots of backups all the time. Whereas the roundabout alternative actually will keep us operating at a level of service B, which is great, through 2040.
Sure. On the roundabout option, is it, in relation to our roundabout we have up here, is it quite a bit wider to deal with RVs and semis and that sort of situation?
It will be, because it will be a little bit different than that, in that it will have some extra legs to it. We're actually going to incorporate those on and off-bound ramp legs into the roundabout, as you can see there in the illustration that's depicted on the right.
And the existing roundabout was designed to take a WB63, which is an interstate truck, through that roundabout. So the concrete apron that's on the roundabout, that's the truck ramp. So it's not decorative there. It's meant for the truck to track upon and go around. So it was designed to take a interstate truck through that roundabout.
Yeah, my concern wasn't so much the interstate truck, but people towing RVs. I mean, it would still take it, but just being familiar with it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct, and that was one of our concerns, is to make sure that, number one, there's a lot of truck traffic that comes across Highway 41 for deliveries here in town and up and down the coast, and so we need to be able to accommodate that. And we also need to be able to accommodate the RVs as well as the school buses that go through the intersection. So that has all been taken into consideration as we've done this layout. And Caltrans is satisfied that it will operate very smoothly. The bigger question, I think, in most folks' mind, particularly those that have been around since we initially did this in 2001, 2002, is how safe are these roundabouts? Because, you know, we're looking at an intersection that gets a lot of kid traffic. You know, Morro Bay High School is right there. You only have to go through there during a lunch hour or on the way to school or when school lets out to see how many kids, pedestrians and bicyclists alike, use this intersection. And so it not only needs to be able to accommodate those trucks and RVs and buses, it needs to be able to accommodate the pedestrians and the cyclists as well. And that's a concern that was foremost in the minds of the school district in the earlier process. And in fact, there was a lot of opposition at that point in time. So what we have done is reach out to the school district, in fact, and after we completed our draft on step two, we met with the principal and the facility director of the Unified School District and discussed, you know, our findings with them. And we were very pleasantly surprised to find out that they are very, very strong proponents of the roundabout approach, and in fact wanted to know how fast could we execute. Yeah. And the reason is quite obvious when you look at the statistics that have been developed over the last 15, 20 years now that roundabouts are becoming more common throughout the nation. What we find is that there's a 37% reduction in overall accidents and roundabouts over a conventional intersection. There's a 75% reduction in serious injury accidents or collisions, and there's a 90% reduction in the fatalities. And almost all of those reductions are as a result of the decreased speeds that you see. You don't have to stop, but you do slow down significantly. And that also is a huge benefit for pedestrians because it results in a 40% reduction in pedestrian accidents. And so you might ask, well, why is that? Well, if you look at a pedestrian's chance of death if hit by a motor vehicle, and I know it's not something we like to look at, but you know, this is the reality. If a vehicle strikes a pedestrian at 40 miles an hour or above, there's an 80% chance of a fatality. If that speed drops to 30, there's a 40% chance, so very significant reduction. And if you're down around 15, which is a typical speed through a roundabout, you're down to 15% chance. So huge improvement. And as you can see, the roundabout intersection speeds are right down there at that 15 mile an hour area. Okay, come on. Let's go. Okay, and the other advantage for vehicles and pedestrians alike is that in a typical intersection, you have 32 points of vehicle conflict and 24 points of conflict for pedestrians, whereas in a regular four-legged intersection, you only have 8 conflict points for vehicles and 8 for pedestrians. You also have a huge advantage because the biggest cause of pedestrian accidents is the long exposure that you have, having to walk across two directions of traffic and at the same time look out for turning vehicles that are turning in three different directions. In a roundabout, what you find here, and you can look at the layout, you can cross more quickly because you're only going with one direction of traffic. You're only looking at you're looking at much slower speeds all the time than a traditional intersection. And you only need to look in one direction for a vehicle, which is really, really important. You can really focus on where the cars might be coming from. Also, the islands are wide enough that they will provide shelter for multiple pedestrians, which is very important for the school traffic. And it provides an alternate route for our bicyclists that we'll get into a little bit later as well. That landscaping also helps direct those pedestrians, because I don't know if you've ever been there as school is letting out or going to lunch, but you've got kids going in a lot of different directions. and this will help channel that flow. And then also, those crossings are guided for the visually impaired, and they'll orient the pedestrians to be looking in the direction of that oncoming traffic. So, as I mentioned, it's also a much better solution for bicyclists, because if you're an experienced cyclist, you can go through the roundabout in the lane with a vehicle as you normally would. And there will be extra width to accommodate that. But if you're a young child, then you're just not comfortable, you can actually follow the red path on the walkway, which is kind of designed in terms of a shared use, so that it will accommodate either. So what you find is a much better solution for all the users at this particular intersection. Now, that better solution does come at a price, unfortunately, and as you look at these two cost estimates that we've received in step two of the ICE, you see we're going to pay about $1.2 million more for a roundabout. But it's a solution that lasts longer and provides much better quality of service and is clearly the safer alternative. So we suspect that as we complete our environmental documentation, that this will end up the preferred alternative. Any other questions?
Go ahead. You want to start?
Start down here and see if we have questions. I love it. It's
great.
Perfect. It makes so much sense. It seems like people are always penny wise and pound foolish, and when you look to the future, and I'm so happy that you're being so proactive and you're getting ahead of these problems instead of us always having trying to catch up, and I think this is great.
And just a question. So it says that they're working with both Caltrans, the city's working with both Caltrans and the SLOCOG to identify construction funding, and they're looking for matching funds. Does that mean that if it's costing $3.5 million, that the city and SLOCOG come up with $1.75 million? Or is that what it means by matching funds? Will they be able? Is this? Sometimes things have to be in the back on the. Be ready to go, shovel ready, and they take ages and ages for the funding to come through. Is this is it down the line? Is it close enough that we can start thinking about this, or do we have to?
Yeah, let's talk to that issue then. Right now, this is the table of funding that we have in play, with the exception of the CMAQ right of way funds. That is not in the RTIP at this point in time, but it's a little bit premature for us to pursue that funding, because that's what it might cost us to acquire right-of-way. And until we get a detailed design, we don't know how much right-of-way. And there are other ways of acquiring that right-of-way. So we have in the budget right now $100,000 to get us started in the right-of-way process. And if we find in a year or so as we get down the line, then we'll go back to SLOCOG and ask them if they can't help program that additional funding there. But you're absolutely right in that it's vital for us to be shovel-ready on this project. And what we find, talking with Caltrans and SLOCOG both, they recognize right now there's a huge shortfall of transportation funding. And they're looking for the projects that they feel confident are going to move forward and have an impact. And so they've asked us to come and brief the SLOCOG board on November the 4th at their meeting. And so we'll be taking pretty much the same presentation there and talking with them about that. But I think it's important for the board also to hear from our community. I mean, so you know, for instance, if we had somebody from the PWAB that would be willing to come and speak based on, you know, your comments here tonight, that would certainly have some weight with the board and help us to move this project forward to get it in line for funding.
I'm sure we can come up with someone.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Does that answer your question, Jen?
I'm pretty much a proponent of roundabouts. I actually designed two down the Santa Maria area, and they work great when they work great. And I agree with the fact, I think that is a good location for it. For some of the people out there, when you look at the other roundabout in town, I think it's basically got three legs because the southbound Quintana side's actually displaced out of the roundabout maybe 100 or 200 feet. So there is a lot more things coming together. But one of the biggest problems, you're probably right in the pedestrian deaths when the speeds go down. But in a roundabout, oftentimes it is hard to see the pedestrian as they're, because you're not sure exactly where they're coming from or how they're going through it. And if I saw this go forward, what I'd honestly like the city to look at is how San Luis Obispo has the lighted crosswalks that picks up somebody when they're in that location, and it tells the person driving into town, oh, there's somebody going through that segment of the crosswalk, because that is one area where, yeah, there's less pedestrian deaths, but there may be a lot more pedestrian injuries as a result of maybe getting hit at 10 miles an hour instead of 40 miles an hour. And on your cost comparison, the roundabout is going to cost more. It takes more land. But the ongoing maintenance, I would assume, is less because, first of all, you don't have to change the controllers for the lighting electrical costs, all the equipment that goes with a signalized intersection. And so, yeah, the initial cost may be more with the roundabout, but I think you may find long term, if you run out the cost of maintaining that location, I don't know if it's the city's or Caltrans, but I assume it's the city's, has to take care of that costing for it. So for a lot of reasons, I see the roundabout. Do you feel you are going to require additional right-of-way in that intersection area in order to get your roundabout to fit?
If we do, it'll be less than 5,000 square feet.
Oh, okay. Because so I figured you could get about a 200-foot diameter.
It's very minimal, and we're already talking with one of the prospective developers about dedicating that because it, you know, they clearly will benefit from the improved traffic flow as well.
To give you the best example, if you signalized it, if you've ever been to Highway 46 at the 101 and you watch how 46 comes under and you got Ramona Drive there, and you know, that is the kind of lighting system you'd probably see if they went into a signalized. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's, to me, the best example I could think of here in the county of what you would have there, because Highway 1 there acts like a freeway. It has off-ramps, on-ramps, and it's grade, you know, grade separated, and it just has that whole feel to it for me. And then I look at something like a roundabout where, if you've ever been down Santa Barbara on Milpas Street, and it's just a nice, attractive feature, especially if they spend a little on landscape, and maybe we could get some extra water for it and go along those lines, and I think it'd be well worth it. But it is coming back to us when you actually have design drawings or wherever you're going.
Yes, it
the
will.
Concept drawings, I should say.
Yeah,
okay.
I think
thank you.
Your remarks about Ramona are right on target.
Yeah.
It probably is a very good example.
It feels that way to me when I drive it, and if any of you have been through it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I would point out that as far as the lights for the pedestrians, there are warrants, and we'll have to be sure that we can justify.
How slow get away?
They're not on a state highway, I don't believe.
Oh, well, that's probably true, too. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So, Rick, in your expert opinion, when it's all said and done, the dust is settled, what's the time frame for this actually realistically ever happening?
Well, a lot will depend on the funding. And to Janice's point, Actually, we're probably talking about $4.4 million when you look at the construction management along with the construction costs. And the city share of 50%, it would be a very significant nut to crack. And for that reason, we're looking at a lot of other funding options as well, and we want to have some discussion with Caltrans, because after all, this is the intersection of two state highways, and it's always difficult to compete for state highway funds, but at the same point in time, the directors do have some discretionary funds that we would hope could be allocated to help move this forward as well. So we're going to be looking at a lot of different alternatives there. The funding will drive the schedule, but we're trying to very aggressively... I went too far. Let me bounce all the way through these again. There it is. So this is the prospective schedule right now that we're working with SLOCOG to help us fund. And the key will be hitting the milestones early in the next 18 months to get through the environmental and get through our preliminary engineering and then our detailed engineering so that we can move forward with any right-of-way acquisition that might need to occur. If I were a betting man, I would say that whole right-of-way piece will be much abbreviated because I don't think there's going to be a lot to be acquired, but you never know. So you don't want to sell it short. But ideally, we want to be in a position in that fiscal year 18-19 to start construction. And Deborah?
So basically what we're talking about right now is with the two state highways involved and all the extra funds that we're going to have to find, that kind of brings us back to the reason for this meeting and this recommendation is to find someone, or not find someone, but we have someone, to give special attention to this project to make sure that all of those funds are found in time and agreements are made and the certifications are done and everything is handled directly.
Well, actually, most of the program management will be done by staff.
Okay.
This will be the hands-on environmental work to complete the environmental document and get Caltrans signed off on that, and then to do the preliminary engineering that allows that environmental documentation. And then as soon as the environmental document is signed, then we'll proceed with the remainder of the detailed engineering and the right-of-way acquisition.
So what the recommendation we're considering is for...
To give Rob the authority to sign whatever funding documents need to be signed to move the project forward. They've given us authority and the initial $300,000 of CMAQ funds. We have to sign some documents to receive that funding and to move forward with obligating that funding.
That's what basically this is about,
right?
Is to get authorization to receive $300,000 in congestion management account funding to proceed forward with the environmental review and the preliminary engineering so we can move the project along to more of a public process.
Is Caltrans requiring this resolution as being specific? They won't accept the blanket resolution that was passed last year? Okay, so it's purely a formality in the sense that Caltrans...
That's correct.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
Chris?
Quick question. Do either of the studies that we're dealing with, are we just dealing with the east side of Highway 1? Is there anything being dealt with the southbound off ramp next to the high school? So we're going to be increased. That's going to be a constant flow now. It's already impossible to turn left basically when it's school time?
Not with this particular project.
Okay.
Yeah. And we find that the level of service at that side is much better than this side. And so it's one step at a time.
I just think we're going to make that side worse by having a constant flow, though.
May have some impact.
Okay. I don't really have any questions. I think they've all been answered. I just wanted to clarify for anybody who may still be listening that any decision we make tonight does not commit us to a roundabout necessarily. We're moving forward with two design alternatives. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands that. And I see we have a member of the public who has joined us, and would you like to speak to this issue?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay citizen. And I came in on this meeting quite by accident, surfing the channel. So I may be speaking out of class, but I happen to be a member of the community that was here when this first was heard. And at that time, I thought it was put to bed, along with a lot of other people who thought it was put to bed, for the simple reason that the intersection does not have the size to support a roundabout necessary to deal in an intersection that's attached to Caltrans freeway. Safety is a major issue, of course, because of the pedestrian traffic from the high school. I don't understand why we have to spend money, and even though it's money not directly coming from our bank accounts, but indirectly, yes, because it takes money from CMAQ that could be used for other projects. I would love to see time, energy, and money spent on coming up with an adaptation to the newest technology for our wastewater, let me get that right, water reclamation facility. That's the project, that not a roundabout that I think in the final analysis is never going to happen. There was a lot of opposition to it. It just doesn't work. Roundabouts do. And the one at the entrance on Morro Bay, yes, it does work, but it's a lot larger. And it won't have the traffic that this intersection will have on Friday night football, fireworks, whatever. It's too small. So I would urge you to put to rest again the necessity for a roundabout. Please. It's a waste of time and money, in my opinion.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your input.
You're welcome.
Okay. Discussion? We'll bring it back here. We'll close public comment.
Well, I was going to say for tonight, I think it's merely giving Rob the opportunity, and there's going to be other... And I'll bring it up to the public also. This is not an approval of a project of putting a roundabout there. It's just merely giving Rob the authorization to deal with Caltrans in order to move processes forward. And I haven't heard that one's going to be accepted over the other anyway, between either a signalized or unsignalized as it is today, or even as a roundabout. So I
may not even get the money. So
I think
there's
we
a lot of ifs still out
in front
there
of us tonight.
I still think we're years away from anything, and we're even probably well into next year before we even get a decision on which way it's going. Or we don't know anything at this point. This is purely informational.
Okay. You're with that too? Then can we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation for Rob to sign, or for the resolution to be put to the City Council to give Rob authorization to deal with Caltrans.
And is there a second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Thank you for listening.
You're welcome.
That's the end of our agenda, unless there's something else that we need to talk about. Otherwise, our next meeting will be held on Wednesday, November 18th, 5:30 in this room. And with that, the meeting... Oh, I should ask, are we having a meeting in December?
We hadn't planned on having one in December take the traditional Public Works Advisory Board break for December. But if something were to come up, we would let you know well ahead of time that we perhaps would have one in December.
Thank you. Then the meeting is adjourned.